Today on Movie World, as we talk about Manchester by the Sea and Rules Don't Apply. It's time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, it is Mark.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, all.
Hello.
Hello.
Another podcast. Kind of excited to talk about our two movies of the week
I'm excited to talk about all of them all of the time now.
In part because one of them, Manchester by the Sea, has been getting a lot of buzz, and I haven't seen that one, so I'm really curious to know what you guys are going to think of that. But before we do that, let's do our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on Netflix, where we talk about our Netflix queues and try and address one of the criticisms that people always come to us with, which is completely unfounded, which is that there is nothing to watch on Netflix. There is tons of stuff to watch on Netflix, as evidenced by...
Burn After Reading. Anyone who knows me knows I'm a Coen Brothers fan, and this is one of their best. Well, they're all the best. That's the problem I have with the Coen brothers.
I wouldn't say it's one of their best, but it's overlooked, and it's comic. It's very darkly, comedically funny, and a superb Brad Pitt performance.
Yes, yes. Amongst, you know, Frances McDormand and John Malkovich and Richard Jenkins and Tilda Swinton and, you know, George Clooney and all of the other people that always appear with them. Just a great movie. I love this. I think I'm coming to the conclusion that there's something wrong with me. Like, I have a sick mind because the more darkly comical something is, the more I love it.
Yeah, you love that 12... What was it? 12... What was that movie last year, which was so dark? 12... Oh, God.
Seven Psychopaths.
Seven Psychopaths.
Oh, Seven Psychopaths.
I was thinking 12 years. 12 years of... Seven Psychopaths. I love those crazy...
Yeah, that was made by the same guy that did In Bruges.
I loved as well.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so I'm not averse to, like, lots of murder and blood, I think, as long as it's comical. Clearly, I enjoy it.
I think there's an absurdity around how dark some of these movies go, and I think it... I know, if anything, they're kind of a narrative on humanity and perhaps, you know, how these directors view the world and view people. That kind of aligns with my own kind of sensibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... You know, Joel and Ethan Coen's gravestones, you know, will not have Burn After Reading on it, but I think it should be on it.
I think it's a great movie.
And Clooney was in that one as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. And they're funny, and they have a unique point of view on life. And again, you know, they tell the truth in a comical way,
and
which
Jake
I just
Simmons
love.
Simmons is in it. He's so good.
Yeah. Everyone is good in this movie. I've never seen anyone act badly in a Coen Brothers movie. So go watch this. Burn After Reading. Put it in your queues.
Yes.
Along with Yasti, your pick?
My pick is a movie which actually came out earlier this year, and it's already, thankfully, available on Netflix, and it's a movie called Sing Street. And
We haven't seen that one yet. Yeah.
No, we have. We saw that one. That was the one with Mark Ruffalo.
No. It's made by the same director. So it's made by the same director Begin Again and
That's
Once.
The one I'm thinking of. Okay.
Yeah, but this is his new movie, and if I had to guess, I would think both of you would absolutely love it because it's probably his most personal movie. It's about this a young boy who's growing up in Dublin who really doesn't have, you know, in the 80s. So it has a lot of 80s music and punk is just kind of catching hold of the country. And he has no musical interest of his own, but he's really besotted with this older girl. And the older girl at that time thinks that the coolest thing that can be done in the world is to appear in a music video.
Okay.
So in order to get the girl, he decides to create a music video which has her in it. But the only way he can do that is to actually form a band. So that's what gets him to start a band. And then to everybody's surprise, he's a really good musician. And it's about the growth of this little band and how they grow. And it's about their own personal lives. And it has got a great sense of place and time in Dublin in the 80s growing up. It just fills you up. It's a sweet, sweet movie. It's got great music. I love coming of age movies more than any else, and this one is quite a gem. I'm surprised it got overlooked.
There's been quite a lot of coming of age movies this year, haven't there?
Yeah.
Gonna have to put that in our queue.
It's always a great genre, though, and when it's done well, it's unlike anything else, because we all can relate so much to those types of things. Yeah. And then my pick was going to be Kung Fu Panda 3, but I feel like I've done that one before. I remember us talking about it, but perhaps I haven't. It's the third movie in, obviously, the Kung Fu Panda trilogy. Movies 1 and 2 were absolutely knockout fun. The second one in particular has some marvelous visual set pieces, and the first one was just such a heartfelt story.
Maybe you've done 1 and 2 before.
Yeah,
I don't think I've heard you talk about 3.
Okay, so 3 is coming out on Netflix, and in terms of the trilogy and a swan song for the trilogy, it doesn't hold up to the high standard of the others, but it was nonetheless, a somewhat satisfying wrap up to where the story took us. It follows the story of Po the Panda, played by Jack Black, and these movies are just a delight to watch. I mean, they're never dull. They're wonderfully inventive, and my favorite thing about them is just how beautifully Asian art is brought to life with these animals and animation. But I feel like it's always done respectfully. It's never done in a way that kind of mocks the culture. It's just beautifully done in a kind of a commercial fun way. And another animation we saw this year which uses that kind of Asian art and imagery is Kubo and the Two Strings, which elevates this type of art as well. But Kung Fu Panda does it so beautifully well. So that would be my pick. And it's an easy film to watch over the holidays with the kids. There's nothing offensive in here, and they're always good fun, and they always have nice little parables about life and how to be. So Kung Fu Panda 3.
Burn After Reading.
Sing Street.
Terrific stuff. So plenty to watch on Netflix if you find yourself at home over the holiday weeks. And more to come in that area soon from us. All right, let's return to our two movies of the week. We have Manchester by the Sea and Rules Don't Apply. Shall we start with Rules Don't Apply?
Okay.
So somebody tell us about Rules Don't Apply.
So Rules Don't Apply is an unconventional love story of an aspiring actress, her determined driver, and the eccentric billionaire who they work for. So this is directed and written by Warren Beatty. And it stars Lily Collins, Hayley Bennett, Tysa Famiga. It has Warren Beatty, Paul Sorvino, Peter McKenzie. Tons and tons of people are in this movie. Matthew Broderick, Candice Bergen, Martin Sheen, Annette Bening. It's got an amazing cast.
And Beatty hasn't directed a movie in a long time. I think the last movie he directed was Bullworth with Eddie Murphy. Long time ago. He hasn't been in movies for a long time.
Yeah. And Alden Ehrenreich also makes an appearance as the main protagonist in this movie, who we saw recently in Hail Caesar.
Yes.
And he was so beautiful in last year's Brooklyn, right?
Yes.
That was the... Not Brooklyn.
That
wasn't him.
No.
That was him. I forgot who that was. That's right. No, you're right. Why do I think of them in the same vein?
Because they've got kind of similar faces. Voice.
Sorry about that, guys. Okay, so
what did you think, Joe?
Oh, okay. So, this is kind of a movie that's reviewed somewhat mediocrely, and I kind of feel the same way here. I think there's lots of ingredients here for a kind of movie that I think could be done in kind of a joyous and a fun way. But this movie, I couldn't relate to the Howard Hughes character, and I think he's genuinely unrelatable. But the movie itself just kind of was dull. It plodded along in a way that really had me checked out. I didn't really buy into any of the characters. I didn't think the movie was particularly well written in terms of the main female protagonist. So I didn't really rate this one. How about you guys?
So this is clearly a labor of love, and this is something that probably Warren Beatty has been obsessed with, for a long time, and he's put together, because it's based on, a real life. It's based on, a person who lived and breathed it, and there's so much legend around the Howard Hughes character. Martin Scorsese, of course, famously made The Aviator, with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, so Kate Blanchett.
It's kind of the story which keeps giving, but this is what my final notes from the movie say. It says, please, dear God, have this film end already. It's terribly, terribly indulgent. Dear God, please, end this film now. And don't ask me to sympathize with this character, please. I mean, it just so, so wore out its welcome. I was with it for the first 45 minutes, and then I was like, oh,
done.
Just end it already. You nailed it. I mean, I don't understand this obsession with Howard Hughes, and maybe I'm not as well schooled in his life and what happened, but there have been so many movies made by these big name directors, and he just is not a very fascinating character. Just because he went kind of loony and over the top in his last years, that in itself doesn't make me empathize with him. And I just, I couldn't care less about this man. I really couldn't have cared less.
So you didn't enjoy the movie?
No.
Yeah. So I'm probably on the same page as you both. I think this movie felt more derivative, but yet more melodramatic. A version of Cafe Society that we saw earlier this year. And that did it so much, so much better. I think I enjoyed it in the moment, but it suffers from being way too long. You've both said it. But I think it lacked a clear arc for me, unless I assume it's just a boy meets girl movie, which I don't know if it is. I mean, I think there's some things to be admired, but it will drop points because it doesn't hang well together. And I agree with you, Joe, that the Lily Collins plays the character very, very well. Nothing to rip into about the way that she plays it, and she's delightful to watch. But as a character, it just didn't make sense to me.
I think, honest, I mean, I have nothing against her. She's lovely. She's perfectly lovely. But I think this role needed somebody with a little bit more depth. She just came across like a 12-year-old to me through the entire movie. So, you know, when things get a little bit dark, it seemed like she was play acting. And maybe that's terribly mean. I actually have no problem with her character or her. I just have a problem with this movie's obsession with, you know, the Howard Hughes character. It's fascinated by it. It's mythologizing him again and again and again. Look how crazy he was. Look how eccentric he was. And after a while, it's like, okay, fine. I don't care anymore.
Well, I think that's okay, Esty.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joanna, you were going to say something. I think that's okay to do if it had been the movie about Howard Hughes. But it gives equal time and credence to this other story that's going on between the driver and Lily Collins. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't make sense to me in terms of whose story are we watching. It just comes across as very confusing. And I know, and the only reason we're watching these three characters in a sense are because they're all in the same universe, but it didn't quite hang.
Yeah, you have to use the word indulgent here with describing Warren Beatty's treatment of this material. I think, you know, there is a certain physical similarity between him and Howard Hughes that I think he thought he could exploit, right? I think he does a good job, I think, of portraying this man. It's the problem is the story didn't give us anything with whom to, you know. I mean, even Scorsese's The Aviator, which I didn't really rate as a movie, at least gave us something with which to bond to the character and follow through the movie. But here he's just kind of dislikable, and I felt very creepy with him and the Lily Collins kind of the whole story there. I mean, it didn't feel
authentic,
but it also didn't feel appropriate. And I think maybe that's the point that was being made here, but it felt like creepy, you know. And it felt, and I think I was never fully engaged with the movie to the point where I could see it as anything other than Warren Beatty getting his hands on Lily Collins, as opposed to Howard Hughes getting his hands on this young actress. You know, it was kind of,
and that wasn't even the motivation. The motivation was that he didn't want to go to a loony bin, and so he felt that he had to get married because then he wouldn't go to a loony bin. So again, you know, those little subtleties are lost, I think, in this movie. So,
I mean, there have been three movies made this year about Hollywood and its golden era.
Yeah.
Cafe Society, which is so good. Hail Caesar, you know, which is, again, so good.
That's right,
and then this one. And I think if there's so much. The movie is beautifully made. It's lovingly put together. It's a long movie, and it's
great production.
Great production values. But it all seems to be at the service of a story that's not worth telling, in my mind. So
yes.
it just feels like such a lost opportunity.
I feel a summing up coming.
Yeah. 4 out of 10 from me. Sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never heard you score that low in a long time.
I just couldn't wait for it to end. I kept looking at my watch. I'm like, please relieve me. Let me go. And honestly, if it wasn't Warren Beatty, this movie wouldn't even be made. So, you know, just, I don't know, write a book, you know, don't force us to watch something you're obsessed with. I don't know. It just felt very...
Joe.
Yeah, the only redeeming feature of this movie is the beautiful song Rules Don't Apply, which I think was written for the movie. And I did actually think it was... It was very appropriate for its era, but it was also a tune that I can remember right now, which is remarkable given that we only heard it in that movie. So that's the only reason to watch it, and that's not reason enough. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 as well. I think that is an extraordinarily generous 5 out of 10 because I did struggle to actually keep awake through this movie. It was so disinteresting in terms of the characters that we saw and the story that was being told.
I mean, the only redeeming feature I can find about the movie is that it's more a feeling about a time versus a great story. And it certainly conveyed the rules of that time in some way. But unfortunately, one always has to consider the rules of good movie making. And despite this being well acted, and beautifully directed, and delightful to watch at times because it was so pretty, it was too long and incohesive. And I couldn't find any clear arcs for any of the characters.
Score?
5 out of 10.
Yeah, a little disappointing.
And that's probably a generous 5.
And it's so choppily edited. It just felt, as long as it is, it just felt like it was all weirdly pieced together.
Yeah. I kept rooting for even a beautiful love story to come out of it. And I wish that maybe had it been edited differently, it could have been that beautiful, epic love story that we saw of Brooklyn, maybe.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen.
I'm curious
and
as
that's
to the
what
timing
kept me,
of its release.
Kept me entertained for at least the most of the movie because I kept hoping, but it didn't come.
Now, I'm kind of curious as to the timing of the release. I mean, it comes at a time of year when there are so many other things in the theatre that it has to compete with just to get air. And, you know, I think it's
We didn't even talk about... There were some great performances by Annette Bening and...
Matthew Broderick's
even,
good.
Yeah, even Martin Sheen. I mean...
Yeah. All right, let's move along.
Yep. I think it's a prestige movie, and he's hoping that it'll get the gilded prestige, you know, that Oscar seems to like, but it's not going to get it, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I think there's too much other good stuff.
Yeah. Okay, move on to movie number 2 of the week, which is Manchester by the Sea. And this comes to us from writer-director Kenneth... Lonergan, sorry, Kenneth, for butchering your name here. He directed a movie a couple of years ago called Margaret, one that I'm not very familiar with, also writer-director, but...
Right there.
Okay, so you're clearly an appreciator of this director. And... The premise is given as the life of a solitary Boston janitor is transformed when he returns to his hometown to take care of his teenage nephew. The story of the Chandlers, a working class family living in Massachusetts, fishing village for generations. Manchester by the Sea is deeply poignant, unexpected, funny exploration of the power of familial love, community, sacrifice, and hope. So
I love how Joe actually managed to say Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's I actually smiled as I said it because as a callback to people who listen to Movie Wallers very regularly, a few years ago I had the hardest time saying the words Massachusetts. I pronounced it as Massachunits, and I couldn't hear myself say it.
I know.
That's like an.
And I love how Yazdi sneaked over to his book cupboard and got us a copy of the DVD for Margaret.
Oh,
which
terrific.
Has actually Anna Paquin in it.
And Matt Damon and Mark Ruffalo.
Wow.
So this movie comes with very high expectations. I didn't mention the cast, but we have Casey Affleck, Michelle Williams, Carl Chandler, Matthew Broderick again. That's the little Kevin Bacon game between the two movies that we have here. So clearly it's...
And let's just say why it's getting a lot of buzz, because I think people are viewing Casey Affleck as a shoo-in possibly for Best Actor.
And it's running an impossibly high, after 79 reviews counted, 99% on a tomatometer. So this is a screening that I couldn't get to, unfortunately. I was out of time for work, but you guys did manage to go see. So what did I miss?
Okay, I've always really liked Casey Affleck because there's something very casual and laid back and real about the way he acts. And this certainly feels like his movie and his moment. This is really well acted. It's an interesting and deep movie with lots of layers and a story that delivers. I really like this movie, and more importantly, I think Casey Affleck was magnificent to watch because of how much range he portrayed over time, and a lot of the movie is told as a series of flashbacks, which can normally be annoying, but this totally worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, this film, while I was watching it, it made me very, very, very anxious. There's certain parts of the movie early on which, I don't know, maybe it was too close to what I'm going through right now, or what I went through or whatever, but it was very hard for me to watch. And I think it's not hard for me to watch in the sense of a horror movie or anything. It's just that it's so authentically made, and it feels so, at every point, it feels like a documentary. It feels like these are real people who are breathing. These are all wonderfully realized characters. And, you know, Kenneth Lonergan's work, I mean, his first movie came out in 2000. It was You Can Count on Me, which was, I think, Laura Linney's first movie. It was Mark Ruffalo and Laura Linney who played brothers and sisters. And then he made Margaret, and now he's, in 16 years, he's only made three movies. Now he's made Manchester by the Sea. And, you know, he always makes movies. All three movies are about people dealing with tragedy. They're all about people kind of dealing with, you know, cruel, horrible things happening, and mostly death, dealing with death. And kind of like the movie Room last year, which was my number one movie of last year, this entire movie is also about recovery. The whole movie is about how each one of us, in some way or the other, are recovering from something, and how do you go about doing it? I do not ever want to watch this movie again because it just affected me so much in the moment. It was just emotionally harrowing. Remember I say, like, it just devastated me completely. It just broke me into pieces. I was crying at different parts. I was like, at points, I was like, I cannot take this. It really gets very, very tragic. Now, and a lot of it is because it's so authentically made, and Casey Affleck breaks your heart, and it's all like onions, you know. As you start off with a character you don't really understand, and then as more and more is revealed, you know, somebody will see this movie and they'll just find it a big downer. But if you look at the structure of this movie, see how it's constructed with the flashbacks and how little pieces of information are revealed to you slowly, and then
it's not the story that you start out watching.
No.
And just to add, sorry, before you ask your question, Joe, I just want to add to what Yasi said, which is it manages to be completely heartbreaking and genuinely funny all at the same time. And that's hard to do because
that was my question, actually, because it says unexpectedly funny.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes observing life and how people behave in difficult situations is difficult to capture,
yeah,
right? Because, and it captures that authentically. And there's this great scene where two characters meet after a long time, and Casey Affleck says, "I haven't got anything big to say." And that kind of sums up appropriately how underplayed the movie is. It's very underplayed. But that one line, "I haven't got anything big to say," really sums up the movie for me.
And again, when we're talking about, not to get all political, but there's a lot of what we call category fraud when it comes to the end of the year, where, you know, very often, you know,
right,
things which should be best supporting actor gets moved into best supporting actor because, you know, they have there's a better chance of winning there. But if you ever want the definition of a true supporting actor, look at Michelle Williams here. She has, what, three scenes in this movie? And I defy anybody to watch that last scene that Michelle Williams is and put their hand on their heart and say she doesn't deserve the best supporting actor. It's just one single scene. I don't know if it's multiple takes or one take. And I don't even want to say it because people will expect things from that scene. But, oh, my God.
So the only reason I wasn't a blubbering mess was probably because I was anxious about meeting Joe at the Oasis movie, which was straight after this.
Yeah.
So I had to get from one cinema to another in like 12 minutes. but I think, Yasti, if I had had the opportunity to just breathe after this movie, I would have been a blubbering mess. It's stunning. I mean, the best thing about this movie... Go ahead.
So what you're describing to me is something that seems very depressing and emotionally heavy.
No, but it's not.
Okay.
The story is very depressing and emotionally
heavy. But the way it's told...
Right. It's actually quite funny.
Yeah.
It's actually quite funny. I mean, I think the whole part... I mean, the premise of the movie is, you know, that...
Casey Affleck's brother passes away and he has to be the guardian of his nephew. That's the premise of the movie.
Yeah, and his interaction with the nephew...
He's not prepared. He hasn't got the tools to be a father.
And see the choices he makes at every scene. I mean, part of me wants to see this movie because it just, you know, affected me so much, but I don't think I have it in me to watch it. It really is quite something. And I like that it's about how we do necessarily change based on what happens to us in life. And it's kind of stupid and actually offensive to tell somebody, just pick yourself up, or, you know, just like shit happens, deal with it. No, right. Shit happens and you become a different person. And nobody has a right to tell you that you cannot be this person. And, you know, Casey Affleck has always been kind of, like you said, so casual, and like he's almost like never acting. It almost seems like he read the script a few minutes ago and he's just now, you know, speaking it out to the camera. But it's a perfect, I think it's a perfect unison year of his persona with what this character needs. And I'd be very surprised if he's not nominated for Best Actor. I think it's pretty much locked. And in my mind, so is Michelle Williams. But again, forget all the Oscar considerations. I just love movies which are, you know, about people just dealing with life and what it throws to them. I mean, just go watch this movie.
How accessible is this movie? Because I think it's...
Extremely. It's not an art house.
I get the sense that it's getting a smaller release, and it's the kind of thing that sounds like it might pick up a second wind after the award nominations. I mean, the cast, I guess, is strong enough to be...
I mean, we haven't even mentioned, like, Kyle Chandler. He's brilliant. I mean, the guy who plays... Yeah, he's great. He adds to any movie he's in. I mean, Lucas Hedges, who plays the nephew... You know, this could be easily overacted. This is about a young boy who loses his father.
Right.
But most of the humor comes from those scenes, I think, when he's acting with Casey Affleck. And these are difficult situations, you know, but this is pretty stunning. So, Yasti, why don't you sum up?
So, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be too generous in giving out high scores, but if Nocturnal Animals is a 9, then this has to be a 9 for me. It's a 9.5, which I'm going to bring down to a 9, mostly because it's so hard to do this stuff. Usually this stuff comes off so manipulative. Anytime somebody makes a movie like Now You're Going to Cry, it's going to come off all wrong. And I think it's because he trusts these characters, and each character is allowed to be so flawed. I mean, look at the son, could have been this goody-goody two-shoes, but, you know, he's very deeply flawed. He's like a typical teenager. And again, the movie does not force, you know, that, oh, suddenly, I don't want to say anything, I'm giving it away, but it doesn't force a typical conclusion to the outcome of the relationship between uncle and nephew. And it's a wonderment. It's beautiful work. 9 out of 10. Oh my God, this movie just broke me.
Rashmi.
The best thing about this movie is that there is nothing predictable about it. It bends and meanders in a good way, not for the sake of shocking you, just because it's telling a complete story about people in a difficult situation. A tragically and genuinely funny movie that will make you reflect on your own life and choices. 9 out of 10.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it is that time of year. I think we've spoken about it just recently on studios loading up the back of the end, the back end of the year with high quality material. But this sounds like something special.
It is very special. Yeah. And it's not showy. It's not like...
It's small. It's small and it's appropriate.
And half the time the camera doesn't move at all. I mean, the camera is just sitting there and people kind of move in and out of the camera. So it's almost not...
It's very confident. That sounds like very... it's very like play-like.
Yeah. And it's very complete. It's a very complete movie. You feel like you've been... You know how we often talk about a good movie makes you feel like that world is still existing? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if we go there, this world will still exist.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, I wouldn't mind going and finding out what happened to these characters 2 years from now, because right. they're there. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. Good. Okay.
So, well, lovers of good cinema, you owe yourself to watch Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see it, and hopefully I'll get the chance not too soon. It looks like it's in theatres November 18th, which, it should have already been out. So,
yep, this weekend.
Yeah, interesting. So I don't know that it's available locally. It's probably in select cities and will roll out. So, pay attention to this one. Don't ignore the podcast just because you don't know the name of the movie. Listen to us and go see it.
Yeah.
Right. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers. Join our community of Movie Rollers fans. We do post whenever we have a podcast on there, so it's the quickest way to find out. Or you can subscribe via our website to your email, and we'll tell you every time a podcast is published. So until our next episode, it's too many movies, too little time, and never has that been truer than the end of the year. Hey, good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.